This is an ABC podcast.
Life is so busy. So busy it's hard to make time for the news headlines, let alone a novel. But if you love reading, there are more stories on offer and more ways to get them. The challenge for publishers and authors is catching our attention and keeping it. You're listening to Future Tense. I'm Stephanie Smale. Our changing reading habits is the topic today, and where reading might be heading. Inside the Avid Reader bookshop in Brisbane's West End, customers are tucked away from the morning traffic, and they're scanning the shelves for a good read. What are you looking for today?
I'm just looking for a gift for my future mother-in-law.
How's that going for you?
Pretty good, I think.
Do you come into bookshops often? Are you a reader?
Not too often, but I have been more lately, since I found this place, actually.
English teacher Kate Broadley has been buying books for her friend's baby.
So I got a Mem Fox book and an Alison Lester book that I remember loving as a little kid.
What is it about reading that you love?
Going on an adventure, I think. So picture books are perfect for that, especially for little kids.
Books still pack the shelves at shops like Avid Reader everywhere, but figures show there's not as many people reading them. Market researcher Roy Morgan has looked into it. In 2004, they found more than half of Australians were reading 4 books a year. But 10 years later, about 1 million people had stopped. Publishers argue books are still their best money spinner, though. And if celebrity support is anything to go by, they're right. Actress Reese Witherspoon's book club has more than 700,000 followers on social media. They're promoting actual print books, recommending a different title every month.
Slow-moving creeks wander, carrying the orb of the sun with them to the sea, and long-legged birds lift with unexpected grace, as though not built to fly against the roar of 1,000 snow geese.
Readers have more power to say what they want, when, and how than ever before, and the publishing industry and authors are running to keep up. Australian author Nick Earls has been part of the publishing world for decades. You might have heard of Zigzag Street or Perfect Skin. They were bestsellers. But a few years ago, he started writing novellas or short novels. They're about 20,000 words long.
One thing I've done over the past couple of years is when I've been speaking at events, I've said to people, put up your hand if you've got a pile of books on your bedside table waiting for the holidays. And so many people put up their hands. In fact, I spoke at an English teachers conference not so long ago with hundreds of people at it, and they all put up their hands. So I figured that something that takes 2 to 3 hours is a plane flight between Brisbane and Melbourne. It's one evening when you want to choose to read and put your device in another room and not engage with the streaming services and do that great absorbing monotasking thing that reading a novel is, but it's a more compact version of that.
He wrote 5 novellas as part of a series called The Wisdom Tree. It was considered a big risk back in 2016, but he says it paid off. And one of the main reasons for that? Audiobooks.
I hand him his tablet as soon as he's buckled into his booster seat, and I can hear the jangle of its startup noises before I'm around the other side of the car. Most of space is space, he tells me as I get in.
Nick Earls has seen a massive change in audiobook offerings. Remember those big boxes of cassettes you used to lug around in the car? Now they're digital downloads. He says audio used to be an afterthought for many publishers, but not anymore. Part of that change was driven by the global ebook giant Amazon, which owns the audiobook empire Audible.com. All the major publishers now have their own audio divisions too, and Google has also joined the party. Nick Earls says audiobooks just keep getting more popular.
Because of the changes in technology, making it easier to make and acquire and play, and because of the changes in people's lives, we see people listening to audiobooks at times when they wouldn't read. And this is where audiobooks don't compete with a paper book, because if you look at studies of people and their use of audiobooks, you'll see that Still, 40% of audiobook users are using them on long drives, but 35% of them or thereabouts are using them while cleaning the house. In Australia, I think 17% are using them while on the toilet. So there's a whole lot of things where, and people use them while exercising. That's quite significant as well. So we are seeing use of audiobooks when you can't read print, and I think that's a really good place for them since we've all got devices for them now, which is why it's no surprise that the audiobook market globally has increased by, you know, 20 to 40% a year on year for quite some time.
If a novella is a bit long to fit into your day, what about getting your reading in episodes, the same way you watch a TV series? The rise of television streaming services like Netflix inspired traditional publishing guru Molly Barton to start Serialbox.
Welcome to fiction that fits your life. Serialbox brings you gripping stories written by talented, award-winning teams of writers with new episodes every week. They're the addictive new shows you can read or listen to at only 40 minutes to read.
You can choose between reading and listening, and they'll even hold your place if you want to switch between.
Switch up your scroll with Serialbox, the one-stop shop for transportable adventure.
Molly Barton saw readers changing habits when she worked at the publishing giant Penguin, and she wanted to harness the popularity of series-driven entertainment or serialization.
It's this ease of entry where you control the intervals. You know what the interval's going to be, and you have this very pleasing experience of saying, yes, I want more of that. Yes, I want more of that, rather than it all being presented to you at once. Then people say, well, what about short fiction? Shouldn't you just read a New Yorker article or something else? But my feeling with fiction, and I'm really focused on fiction, is that it takes some effort as a reader to get into the voice of the author. And that's the same whether it's a novel-length work or a short story. And then as soon as the short story's over, you don't get to have the relationship with the characters that you kind of invested in.
She points out reading is a private pastime, but it's also very social. And the act of discussing and sharing the stories you've come across is part of the fun.
You can meet up with a coworker or a friend or your aunt and say, did you see episode 3? You know, like, exactly where to begin the conversation. So it's highly social in a way that novels are a bit harder to access. Obviously, book clubs are wonderful, but it takes a bit more effort and work to get to some point of connection. Another bit that's interesting about publishing serially, we don't have everything sort of locked in. So when we release the first one, the last few episodes aren't totally finished, which is great because we can watch what's happening with readers, what they're reacting to, what they're saying on social media. Because each series that we produce, we plan for multiple seasons. So we want to see what's happening so we can kind of steer the story depending on the reader response.
Deloitte figures show nearly 90% of Australians have a smartphone. Screens and digital devices are a huge part of our life. We can easily get novels on our iPhones or Samsungs, but there's also the lure of bite-sized chunks of writing on news sites and social media. News websites are working hard to catch our attention and keep it.
Okay, so we're leading with this Melbourne story about elite young gymnasts being...
At ABC News Online, there's a 7 a.m. conference call every morning to discuss the stories of the day and whether they're popular with readers.
It's a pretty good story, right? So this is in Melbourne. There's also a centre of excellence in Perth, but I think that's a good choice for the lead at the moment.
We've got Alan Jones, which is doing really well.
So we're going to get video on that.
Grant Sherlock is the editor of ABC News Digital.
Every day we are learning more from the audience, whether it's the way we write a story about house prices and we learn the platform that's been really successful on and we know a little bit about the types of people and the ages of those people and things like that that use that platform. We're kind of listening to them all the time and reading into those consumption habits, the messages that they're sending us. And sometimes they're pretty blatant messages. They tell us when we've done a really bad job at delivering a story because they don't read it or they don't share it or they don't spend any time on it.
What's your opinion about ideas and criticisms that the new ways that information can be packaged could be seen as dumbing down information?
that's where discerning readers come in. Readers have been more informed or more aware of their choices than ever before. And that really means that they're armed to make good judgments about what they consume. And they can spot what you would refer to as dumbing down, or they can spot what we'd refer to as clickbait. There's no problem with someone wanting a wrap of last night's reality TV program to read on their way to work. I'm not saying the ABC is going to create that. We're not. But the idea that another news organization creates that, I'm not going to call that dumbing down. It's if people are going to read it, they're saying they're interested in that topic.
Next up, we've got a conversation piece about airline prices, which is doing really well as well. It's quite interesting.
What's the appeal?
The ABC Online team has moulded its news service around huge technological changes over the past decade. So Grant Sherlock and his team know very well that predicting the future is impossible. But he doesn't think shorter stories, headlines or updates will replace feature writing or longer form journalism anytime soon.
With the rise of smartphones, a lot of people did say, and a lot of people were tempted to say that that meant, you know, attention spans were decreasing massively, and people were now only consuming news when they were standing in the queue at the bank or on the bus to work. And that meant that they couldn't take any more in with this modern life than two or three pars or 150 words of a story. That really wasn't borne out. No one really predicted that the sizes of mobile phone screens were going to go back up again. You know, the trend had been to go down and down and down, and then all of a sudden we went back up, and all of a sudden they were the most popular phones. Our experience is with long-form journalism, the demand continues. You know, in many ways, a lot of organizations around the world are only getting better at long-form journalism and long-form text. And really that means we have to be clever about how we serve that to people, how they consume, how they spend 25 minutes reading a single piece of content on their mobile phone, how and when they do that and what experience they get from that. We need to put a lot of thought into that. But I personally would very much like to think that it is going to continue.
And so would Nick Earls. He's hoping that trend will translate to readers sticking with novels too.
I think there is a place for snackable content, but what I hope is that doesn't compromise what we get out of much longer content. I think some things can be abbreviated effectively. Some things can be delivered in something no longer than a tweet. And much as I'm on Twitter and have tweeted now several thousand times, that doesn't give me what I get out of writing a book or reading a book, whether that book is novella-sized or novel-sized. And what I hope we will find is that there's a place for all of these things, but there is also a place for deep and engrossing reading. There's research out of York University in Toronto and the New School in New York that shows that people who read character-based fiction have more empathy because they spend more time traveling with people who aren't exactly like them.
You're listening to Future Tense. I'm Stephanie Smale. Our changing reading habits is the topic today, and where reading might be heading. Libraries are another traditional institution reinventing books to reach more readers. If you follow the New York Public Library on social media, you'll find classic novels being transformed into Instagram stories. The story of Alice in Wonderland is there in full. You just tap on the screen to get page after page of the classic, and every now and again there's an animated illustration. Social media is delivering other traditional forms of writing to new audiences too. The rise of so-called Insta poets is one example.
I didn't plan to ever share my work online. I don't even know why I did.
Canadian poet Rupi Kaur made a name for herself on Instagram, then self-published her first book. She writes about love, the female body, sex and race.
There was one girl following me from Seattle, and we were kind of like online, like Twitter friends, and then she commented, and it was like a poem about sexual abuse, and she commented and she said, "Your poetry makes me feel like a woman." I don't know, like that comment from all the comments that I've read over the past like 2 years, like that was the one.
Her work can be controversial and she's won international attention for it. She was on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon earlier this year promoting her second book.
So I wrote this piece called Timeless, right? Because I published my first book, Milk and Honey, and all my publishers and everybody around me, you know what, wait, my publisher, AMP, they're amazing, but everybody else was like, all right, girl, you need to write a second book right now, catch the wave, or somebody else is going to come replace you. And I was like, oh my God, that's so much pressure. I'm like 22 years old, what? And so then I wrote this poem to sort of say, stop, I'll do it when I'm ready. It's called Timeless. They convinced me I only had a few good years left before I was replaced by a girl younger than me. As though men yield power with age, but women grow into irrelevance. They can keep their lies, for I have just gotten started. I feel as though I just left the womb. My 20s are the warm-up for what I'm really about to do. So wait till you see me in my 30s. Now that will be a proper introduction to the nasty, wild woman in me. How can I leave before the party started? Rehearsals begin at 40. I ripen with age. I do not come with an expiration date. And now, for the main event, curtains up at 50. Let's begin the show.
Nick Earls agrees the digital world is a powerful way to share and sell stories.
The most powerful way to sell a lot of books is word of mouth. And it remains word of mouth, but word of mouth is no longer two friends bumping into each other on the street, exchanging information about a book they've read. Word of mouth is something that happens digitally. And because it happens digitally, it can spread to far more people at a far faster pace. So the book industry hasn't really worked out how to harness that, and that's okay. I think it's healthy that industries don't know how to control these things. I think it's healthy that these things happen of their own accord. But we'd all like to find the kind of magic button to press to be the recipients of that great word of mouth.
So do you think that's what will keep people reading in the future, that humans are still essentially part of a community, that they do still communicate with each other and make recommendations and share stories about things that they've been doing and reading?
Yes. So I think that's a powerful force in books having some, in individual books having some kind of prospects. And I think it creates two things. One is it creates blockbusters. By the same token, what you can see is the development of global niche markets. So if you create a product that appeals to a relatively small number of people in your town, but appeals to the same percentage of people in other towns in your country and in dozens of other countries, you may well just find yourself with a viable commercial market. So I'm hopeful that we will see a greater diversity of storytellers and a greater diversity of stories being told.
When ebooks arrived, there were worries they would wipe out print novels, but the traditional book is standing its ground. Paperbacks are still dominating the market, and ebooks only took about 18% of sales in 2017.
I like the real thing, yeah.
What is it about the real thing that you like?
I like the accessibility of it, you know. You can have it with you without any electricity or any. And I like being able to lend it to other people too. So my sister's a Kindle reader now, and she used to often lend me books, but no, not anymore.
A recent study from the University of Arizona and Towson University shows she's not the only one frustrated with the lack of sharing options. Tough digital rights management rules were blamed for stopping readers sharing their books with friends. The study also found people like the sense of self and belonging a book gives them. So, what has the experience of a publishing house been in this changing environment? Australian company Pantera Press joined the industry in 2008. CEO Alison Green started the business in what she calls a time of risk-averse publishing. She and her team focused on finding new Australian writers like Lynette Noni. She's the young adult fantasy author who wrote the very successful Madoran Chronicles. Alison Green says the days of the book release are over.
I would say that we publish stories, not books. So how a user chooses to engage with the content and the great stories that we're producing is really up to them. We're agnostic. We publish in print and simultaneously we publish in ebooks. And at the moment, our focus is really trying to make sure that we can publish in audio at the exact same time. But at the moment, for us and the market generally, print is still the majority of retail sales.
She's made stories her business, but she's also sentimental about the act of reading.
One of the stats that I love is that reading can reduce stress more quickly than having a cup of tea, and it can reduce stress by as much as 68%, which works much faster than things like listening to music, going for a walk, or having that cup of tea, which is crazy and wonderful and beautiful.
Pantera Press is still focused on traditional formats like novels because they're turning the best profits. But Alison Green points out she's open to serialisation or any other form of release to keep selling stories.
We know that readers will expect to be able to engage with this content in a timely fashion and that it will be available broadly across platforms and devices so that as a consumer they can choose how they engage with and share that content. And that's a really important piece, I think, for us as an industry as a whole, as we embrace and support new technologies and continue to try to find innovative ways to connect with consumers that might want to engage with the type of content that we're publishing.
We've heard from the experts on who reads now and how, but what about future generations? Will children keep reaching for books? Do stories stand a chance against social media and television? Alison Green says they do.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, our industry by both volume and value continues to grow, particularly in the children's and young adult space. You know, our own anecdotal evidence or discussions have really been that because there is so much screen time now and everyone is spending so much time on their computers and their tablets, it's become increasingly more important for young people to switch off. And if anything, there has been a real emphasis from parents around the importance of reading, and that in the millennial age group, and we've done quite a bit of work in the millennial space because we launched a new imprint of ours called Lost the Plot just last year, which is really about shaping content for the millennial generation so that it's digestible and accessible and beautiful. And what we've found from that is very much that, you know, in that millennial age bracket, there is a real thirst for going back to the traditional and taking a break from that screen time, similar sort of to what we've seen in the music industry with vinyl.
When ebooks started becoming a bigger thing just over 10 years ago with the introduction of the Kindle, I think they expected children and teenagers to be among the biggest and earliest adopters, and that's just not how it came to pass. I've got an 8-year-old son, and I see kids at his school carrying battered paperbacks around with them all the time, and every time I see it, I'm glad. What we're seeing is a generation or two of people who have emerged into a screen-filled environment. A lot of them are finding a place for reading in that, and surprisingly, the reading is typically not happening on the screen.
Grant Sherlock calls himself a news junkie. When he's not at work, he gets most of his news from his phone. He admits he's wrestling with how to encourage his daughter to read books instead of reaching for a digital device. And as the editor of ABC News Online, he sees the benefits that reading has for developing writing skills.
I am someone who spends a ridiculous amount of time with my mobile phone, and I'm constantly battling with my behaviour around my daughter and failing quite a lot of the time. And that worries me because I loved books when I was a kid. growing up, I think that was such an important thing. And I also, quite frankly, see that in the standards of writing. And when you're dealing with student journalists and things like that, reading plays a huge part in your ability to spell and your ability to use one word over another. Two words sound quite the same and mean totally different things. It's through reading that we have an understanding of that and we broaden our vocabulary because we're reading words we don't understand. Now, clearly you can do that in a digital space, but I think that reading an actual physical book is a beautiful thing and it is an experience.
English teacher Kate Broadley tells me she wishes reading was more of a priority for her teenage students, but she's still hopeful their parents will keep trying to make it a priority.
I think that there'll always be a place. I mean, reading is about communicating. We're all communicators at heart, so I think there needs to be more importance placed on reading. So what better way than introducing kids to it, I guess.
If you're worried that reading shorter snippets of writing or trawling the internet is making you dumb, don't be. Professor George Paxinos is one of the world's top neuroscientists and is widely known as the man who mapped the brain. He says the more information, whatever format it comes in, the more the brain will absorb.
In the nearly half a century that I have been teaching at the University of New South Wales, I have not noticed the standards to fall. There were good students then, they are good students now. So my suspicion is that the current stimulation that students receive from the social sites and the games is not hampering their performance.
Scientists have found humans are getting better scores on IQ tests now than in the 1950s because it's so easy to learn new things.
Scientists presume is because of the greater stimulation, the greater availability of information. People study more as well, even reading on the internet. Things that the IQ tests measure, which is really predicting university performance and giving you analogies like an arm is to the body as a branch is to a tree, those things are more available to preschool education now than it was in the 1950s.
Professor Paxinos points out, if you're reading, you're reading. It doesn't matter how, when, or where.
The brain will absorb the information that there's motivation to absorb. But as to whether it is in large chunks, such as reading a novel, or in smaller bits, such as the headlines running across a bulletin board on George Street in Sydney, it doesn't matter to the brain. Both of them are welcome, much like if you are having a sustained conversation or simply saying hello to someone.
Some good news for those behind in their reading. Professor George Paxinos from the University of New South Wales. And that's Future Tense for another week. Next week, Karin Savanovitz and the Olympic potential of esports.
The definition of sport is an activity that's highly competitive. Well, we could say that esports ticks that box well and truly, that it's very popular. Yes, it's the most popular content among the next generations. Is there a strong governance structure? That's where I think esports is probably weak at this point, but we're going to really quickly see that change. Whether it becomes an Olympic sport is another question. It should, on the basis of that definition of sport, and also the fact that to ensure that those great traditions of those huge global events resonate with those younger segments, then maybe it would be a great addition.
That's Olympic esports next week. My thanks to sound engineer Dave White. I'm Stephanie Smale. Thanks for joining me.